Do you ever catch yourself saying, English is just crazy? Maybe your students come across a tricky word and you tell them, you just have to memorize that one, or this is the part you have to know by heart. But deep down, you know it's still confusing. Here's the truth. English isn't random. It's a wonderfully complex system, and once you understand how that system works, through sound, structure, and meaning, everything changes. That's what Sarah Paul and I teach inside Mastering Morphology. This isn't another curriculum. It's deep teacher knowledge inside a practical comprehensive course that finally shows you how words really work. No more exceptions, no more gimmicks or patching holes with memorization or phonics alone. It's time to go beyond sound it out and give your students the framework they need to truly understand words. So if you're ready to stop guessing and start teaching with confidence, join us inside Mastering Morphology. Enrollment is open now, so we invite you to click the link in the show notes to get started. You're listening to episode 55 of Literacy in Color. On today's episode of Literacy in Color, I'm joined by Justin Browning, a national literacy consultant and founder of Soar for More. Justin specializes in systems-level change, working side-by-side with districts, schools, and teachers to make sure the science of reading isn't just learned, but truly implemented. With over 15 years of experience as a classroom teacher, middle grades math teacher, turnaround school instructional coach, and field implementation coordinator, Justin has seen firsthand how literacy instruction succeeds or stalls, depending on implementation. He's passionate about moving knowledge into action, modeling evidence-based practices, and building the capacity of both teachers and, more importantly, leaders. Today, Justin and I dig into what real implementation looks like, why PD can feel like knowledge bombing, and how to shift from knowing to doing, and why strong leadership and systems are the keys to lasting change. And I also want to preface by saying you are absolutely going to love all of Justin's quotable nuggets that he's going to leave with you today. Welcome to the Literacy in Color podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Sullivan, a science of reading advocate with over a decade of experience as a reading interventionist and literacy coach. I'm passionate about making evidence-based instruction both effective and engaging. If you're interested in captivating our learners on reading fluently and understanding language, or as I like to call it, keeping it colorful, then you've found the right place. Each week, we'll explore intriguing lit bits and practical strategies around the science of reading and structured literacy to help you be colorful and teach colorfully. Are you ready to bring literacy to life? Let's color outside the lines and make an impact together. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Literacy in Color. Today, we are in for a real treat with Justin Browning here with us today. I had the pleasure of meeting Justin at the Reading League Conference last October, just briefly, and I've come to know that he is very well connected in a lot of literacy circles around us. So Justin has a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of experience in implementation of structured literacy practices. So he is joining us today to talk about implementation. So welcome to the show, Justin.
Thanks so much, Michelle, for having me.
Of course. Let's hit the ground running. And can you just give us a brief introduction into your background and perhaps what even inspired you to start your consulting firm, Soar for More, which I adore the name of that, by the way.
Yeah, it was so fun to figure out a name. It's also a daunting task, right? You probably went through the same thing when you're coming up with your podcast name and your business name. But I really love it because I think it's an extension of my mission, right? To make sure that schools really do achieve more by implementing structured literacy. So a little bit about me and who I am. My name is Justin Browning. I am currently in Atlanta, Georgia. A little bit about my history as far as what I've done is I was an elementary school teacher for many years, spent the majority of my years in second grade, also taught first grade. I taught fourth grade, my very first year of teaching. And then I taught sixth and seventh grade And everyone's like, ooh, did you have a momentary lapse of judgment? The answer is yes and but, right? All of those things. But that year was pivotal for me because I realized that the reading crisis was pervasive, right? And it really hit when they were in sixth and seventh grade and they were failing at reading and writing, and it impacted their ability to articulate their thinking around math. I was a math teacher, and to really just read the problem. So it wasn't that they couldn't do math, but they lacked the language and the literacy skills that really allowed them to do that. So that year was pivotal for me. It was a year where I said, you know what? I was on the path to administration. That's why I was teaching math, because I felt like I knew literacy and I needed to learn math. And so I thought there's no way to learn math from the bottom up than from going to the top and seeing what I don't know and how to support kids who are struggling. And so I did that for a moment. I then went and I was an instructional coach at a turnaround school. And so I was working with a turnaround school for a few years as their instructional coach. It was a founding school, a brand new school here in Atlanta. I did that. And then I went to the Rollins Center for Language and Literacy, where I had the real honor of being the field implementation coordinator for a project called Literacy and Justice for All. And we were able to partner with local districts. The district that I partnered most closely with was Marietta City Schools. And we were actually able to see tremendous growth there. I'm thrilled to say that one of the schools I partnered with there actually was number one in the state of Georgia. And they just released it in the Georgia Milestones. And it's all to the leadership there, the amazing educators, and the work that they've done to create systems and structures that really sustain success. And so I feel like I have a small part in that, but it really is a huge, huge round of applause for the leaders in that district and in that school. So this work works. I'm passionate about it. Why? Because I've seen it work. I've seen what happens when we focus on implementation and really when schools commit to soaring for more, right? Like, we really can take schools to new heights, but it requires us to think differently about systems and structures in order to do so. So that's a little bit about me. I have my master's in education administration. Like I said, I thought I was going to be a principal. That's not the case. Instead, every day I'm working side by side with district leaders, school leaders, and now teachers to really implement structured literacy and to bring the science of reading to life in classrooms to really give students the opportunity to soar.
I love that. And it's amazing how you had all of those different opportunities and experiences across the field, from the primary grades to middle school to implementation work and coaching. And every piece of the puzzle led you to where you are today. And just listening to you speak, you are very inspirational. And I love how you're talking about this work really works. And oftentimes we hear the adage of know better, do better. There's an important component of knowing better, but it's not just about doing better, it's knowing how to do better. So today we're going to talk about implementation. So why do you think implementation maybe is the missing piece when we're talking about moving the needle with our literacy statistics? And what is it about implementation where schools often get stuck?
This is the million-dollar question in a lot of places right now, right? Because people are saying like, hey, we've done letters, we've taken this online coursework, but we're not seeing the needle move, right? And I really think that implementation is what moves the knowledge into action, but in a strategic manner. It's making sure that we have the support to ensure that we're on track to really reach that ambitious end goal of 95% of our kids reading at or above grade level. Honest talk, I really think when I think about why we get stuck, I think that we are in a PD, professional development overload crisis right now. And I don't know about you, but I am so guilty of signing up for every webinar that's out there and then not attending live and not listening to the recording. Do you feel that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And
I think the same thing is happening with teachers, is that there's so much opportunity to learn and learn and learn and learn. But also it's been mandated in a lot of places through legislation that you have to learn this, you have to learn it in this really tight window of time. And what I call this is I call this knowledge bombing. And what's worse than knowledge bombing is mandated knowledge bombing, right? Where they're having to take this coursework and do it quickly to check off that we did it for legislation. There's a little bit of a danger zone there that it turns into compliance over something that is actually being implemented in schools. And so we have to then, as schools, think about what are we doing with this knowledge that teachers are getting? How are we moving it from knowledge to know-how? Because it really is, implementation is that missing piece that moves us beyond just informing people, right? And it moves us from informing to transforming, or from information to transformation. That is the piece that transforms schools. Just having knowledge alone isn't going to do it. And I see that in almost every district I'm working in. I've worked in hundreds of schools over the last few years. And I just see that we are informing, we're dumping information on people. They're getting knowledge bombed, but there's no real strategy around how do we make sure that we move from informing to transforming. And so that's what I do day in and day out. One of the things that I notice and that I work with leaders on is thinking about the starting point and the ending point. Here's where we're starting. Here's where we need to end. And what does it take to get there? And too often we do all the knowledge part at the beginning, right? And it's no, 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 no. And then we say, okay, now go do it. And what happens is they start doing it, but we are a little bit off track and a little bit more off track because the knowledge and the action are so far disconnected from each other in the cadence and the cycles that we've set up in our buildings to ensure that they're doing what we ask them to do. And it was just too much. And so when we know, no, 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 and then we expect them to do, 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 that creates a problem because it doesn't lead to a path that is clear where teachers can really make sure that we get to the end goal. And so I often teach them, like, let's instead think of it in an alternative way. And let's think of it this way. Let's know a little and let's do a little. Let's learn a little and do a little. Learn a little, do a little. And what happens when we break it down and we're learning a little and we're doing a little is it really puts a focus and an energy into that moment of learning for the teachers. And then those moments turn into momentum over time. And there's a lot that teachers have to learn. There's just a lot, right? And I get that a lot from leaders is they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is too much. And it is a lot, right? But we can, as administrators, as district support staff, as superintendents, really help create a path where let's create a learning path where teachers and leaders are learning a little, doing a little, learning a little, doing a little. That's where we create momentum. And we actually, I've done that in several schools now where we create cycles where we're going to learn this much information. I'm going to give you the critical content. You're going to understand the what are we doing? The why is it important? And then how do I do it? And then guess what? As soon as we learn that, it's go time. And we're going to put it into action, but we're going to do it in ways that are supportive along the way, where you have a coach that's working side by side with you, where you are actually practicing in a low stakes environment. In a lot of schools, we call those lab sites, but we might bring them in a classroom and we tell the kids, like, you have a really special job today, and your job is to help your teacher learn. What kid doesn't want to be their teacher's teacher, right? Like, that is the job of all jobs. Forget all the other classroom jobs. Today, I'm the teacher's teacher, and I'm going to really help my teacher learn something. And so we will model in that environment because I think it's really powerful for teachers to see this doesn't just work over there, or it doesn't just work for, and I hate this term, the low kids, but it actually can work everywhere. And it can work with the kids right here in our school. So we model for them in that. So we learn a little and then we do a little, but that modeling is part of that doing a little. We may then flip the script and say, hey, now we're going to meet in the gym. And the same class that are the teacher's teachers, right? Those kids, maybe we break them into groups and the teachers then have to apply and teach what we've been doing, right? And practice that with the kids. This can be really powerful too. Why? Because it allows teachers to try it on in a low stakes environment. It allows leaders to know what to look for, right? And we can celebrate those things that are going well, but it also allows leaders to see, like, here's some places where we're going to have to tweak. And I can coach those leaders in that moment, say, here's what I would coach into here. So it's really a double whammy of, like, hey, here's what we get to, like, this is, we're getting a big bang for our buck here, because not only are we learning, our teachers learning, but also the leaders are learning in that moment of that kind of, we call that a flipped lab site, or really just an opportunity to practice in a low stakes environment. So I think there's a lot to do there. And after they do that, then we want them to do it in their classroom, because not only have they practiced in a low stakes environment, the principal, the district leaders, everyone can see, like, oh, they can do it, right? They can do it. So now let's put it into action. But we didn't just say, here's what you need to know, go do it and hope for the best, right? I think so often we hope for the best. We can't hope that it happens. We have to make it happen. And it's making it happen through really intentional moves in professional development planning. And so planning out those cycles was so important. Like, how are we going to give them information? Then how are we going to turn that information into transformation? And we do that through exactly what I just told you, right? Like, we're going to learn a little, and then we're going to do a little. And then guess what? It's going to compound. We're not going to stop doing that thing we just did. We're going to keep that in our daily practices, and now we're going to learn something new. And that's really the way that we've seen the needle move in a lot of schools, is by breaking it down into chunks. It does take, I think people want this to be a one-year process. There's no way that this is a one-year process, because there simply isn't enough time in our schools to share the amount of information and to do the amount of implementing that has to be done. But I do think in 3 to 5 years, you can transform practices in the model that I just shared with you. And I've seen it happen in school after school after school. So yeah, I think we really have to just focus on learning a little and then doing a little. And that right there is where you begin to see that missing piece plugged in, and then the big picture starts coming together.
That's so powerful. And can I just say, you are so quotable. I feel like I need a Justin Browning desktop calendar with your adages, because they are so powerful, going from information to transformation. And I really, really love that. And you're so right about this knowledge bombing. It's especially with the legislation, and we're throwing all of this information with teachers, and they don't necessarily know what to do with that information, or they don't know how to apply it right away. You attend a fabulous professional development, and then what happens on Monday? And to have that really integrated approach. When I was coaching in the last school I worked, we used to do lab sites like that. And my teachers would say, this is my favorite professional development, because it's embedded into the school day and we're practicing with real kids. We're learning a little bit, we're going into the classroom, then we're debriefing. There's no time to be scared and trying something new, because we're all just sleeves rolled up and doing it together. And I think there is so much power in that. And especially how you said, even if the administrators are rolling their sleeves up and trying that work as well, because all stakeholders have to know what it takes to build readers. And it's really, really important work. So you talked about this knowledge bombing. And so even when professional learning is really high quality and schools are really doing a great job in providing learning, in your experience, what are some of the common reasons why schools maybe struggle to move from this knowledge to practice piece?
I think a lot of times it's that professional learning possibly can come from outside sources, right? And that can be a danger zone. I talk about danger zones a lot, because what it does is it puts that really in someone else's bucket of responsibility. They were responsible for providing it. I hope that the teachers are doing it. But the problem is that oftentimes in those environments, leadership is not keyed in to exactly what's being said, right? It's the first time they're hearing the information. It's the first time they're experiencing it as well. And so making sure that leadership, A, gets a head start on what is it that teachers will be learning? What do I need to be aware of? Where can I anticipate that there are some technical and adaptive challenges that have to be considered in the implementation and rollout of this? And really guiding whatever that PD is, and having just a conversation. I oftentimes with leaders, before I go and present PD, before we work on our next rollout of whatever the implementation is, we have a leadership session where we say, here's what your teachers are about to learn. What questions do you have? Like, where is this unclear? What is this going to cause us to think about on the actual implementation side? What resources do they need? What barriers are going to need to be removed? All of these things become a conversation. And so leadership has to be present in the professional development, even if they're not providing it, right? And I want them to see that if I'm working with a school, that this isn't a Justin thing coming in. This is the way we do things. And we have to make sure that they are willing to talk up in the session and say, oh, this connects to this piece, because you don't always know their context, right? And so they can apply the contextual information that's helpful, but that they're really seen as support in that PD, and that they are leading, even if they're not leading, if that makes sense. I also think, like, one of the ways that it falls apart and why we can't move from knowledge to practice, even if it's high quality professional development, is that sometimes it's a one-time, like, okay, we got the PD, and then it feels like a one-time experience. What we know about PD and what the research has shown us is that job-embedded PD that's really sustained over time is most effective, right? It shouldn't be a one-time conversation. It has to be something that is seen as, this is the most important work we're doing with teachers. I often say, what would happen if we started saying, hey, we're going to celebrate student outcomes and student successes. But what if we really started, and really student learning and student growth, what if we started celebrating teacher learning and teacher growth and teacher outcomes? Like, that's going to be a shift. There's so much from the student-focused approach that we use in schools that we can apply to teachers. Like, we have to start thinking about professional development as universal tier one instruction for teachers too, right? We have to create that safety net where teachers have the opportunity to practice with high levels of support and corrective feedback. And we know that a core tenet of universal instruction is the gradual release, right? Most of the times RPDs are an I do, listen to me, and then go do it, you do. We are missing the critical piece there of that we do component really. And that we do component is where we build mastery. We have to remember that the we do is where we build mastery. The you do is where you show mastery. We cannot skip from the I do to the you do with our teachers. We have to make sure that we provide that we do, because what would happen if our teachers were so successful that 80% of them were hitting the nail on the head every time? That will change student outcomes. And so applying this same idea to teacher development and how we're professionally developing our leaders too is critical, because our teachers and leaders need that level of support too. They need lots of opportunities to respond and to practice with side-by-side coaching and really feedback in real time. So one of the ways that I do this, and you're going to learn, you said something earlier about I'm quotable. I'm also an alliteration nerd and a rhymer, right? I love rhyme. I love alliteration. I get made fun of for it, and I'm okay with that because it helps me remember, right? And so the model I use for PD is we're going to learn it, we're going to live it, and we're going to lead it, right? So you're going to learn it. And we talked about that earlier, like whatever the information is, you're going to know what it is, why it's important, how to implement it. Then we're going to live it out. You're going to do that work with support for a little while, and then you're going to lead it on your own, right? And that's really kind of that release. It's like, let's go ahead and lead it. You're still going to get support throughout. We're going to monitor that. I love John Maxwell's work around like how we support really development of people. What do we have to do? We have to model, we have to mentor, we have to monitor, we have to motivate, and we have to multiply. Like, those are powerful. That's alliteration again, right? But it sticks with me, it's sticky. And then we have to provide PD that is attached to the curricular resources that we're using. I think that is oftentimes why PD falls short, is that we're doing PD as this standalone thing that really isn't exactly connected to what I'm doing in my classroom with the approved resource. And I know that's a sticky, icky word for teachers, right? Approved resource. But there is something to the entire team playing from the same playbook, because it's really difficult to strategize, to coach, and to ultimately win when we're all playing from a different playbook. And so when we practice with what we use in the game, we're really preparing ourselves to win. And I think that is so, so powerful when we think about, like, why are we expecting people to all use the same high quality instructional materials? Why can't you do something for your class and I do something for mine, and the lady down the hall or the man down the hall does something different? It's because we're not playing from the same playbook then, right? And when we leave teaching reading and writing up to teacher choice, we really leave learning to read and write up to chance. And that's really dangerous. Like, when we're thinking about school improvement, when we leave things up to choice, we really leave them up to chance. And so those are just a few things I think of, and why possibly good PD falls flat is because it's not aligned to the curriculum. And then that we're not sticking in the we do. We're not treating teacher professional development the same way we treat student learning. And I think there's a lot to be learned from that.
Yeah. And that was really powerful how you were talking about leaving the student outcomes to chance too, because there's so much inequity in that. And sometimes teachers feel like, oh, if I could just shut the door and do what I want. It's not fair to the children if this kid is getting an experience where they're learning really well and another classroom that's not happening. So we need to level a playing field where everyone feels successful. And as you were talking about the teacher professional development, I'm thinking about the science of learning, right? And we talk about the science of learning for our students all the time. And we're not going to just deliver 1 hour hefty lesson to our students and expect them to get it. We need those short bursts of instruction and practice retrieval and
all of that.
Just all of those things. And the same goes for us as adults. And it's not necessarily having professional development where you feel like a child. It's having professional development where you are embedding this knowledge into your brain so that you can practice it and improve your craft.
And that surprise, it's focused on learning for the adult, the same way we focus on learning for students, right? Like, that needs to be our goal of professional development, that it's not just, I taught it, I hope they got it, but I taught it. Yes, for sure. They got it right. And I think like that is critical, that if people are walking away from our professional development environment saying like, oh, that could have been an email, y'all, there's a red flag. We are in trouble. And so we have to make sure that PD environments, and I say this a lot when I'm working with leaders, that when we are providing professional development for leaders or teachers, first, that we are crystal clear on what we want them to acquire. What is that piece of information? We can overload them the same way science of learning, cognitive load theory, right? We can overload teachers to a point that they can't take in new information. So what is the critical piece we want them to know? What do we want them to acquire? And then based on what we want them to acquire, can they articulate that knowledge? Too often, what I see in places where teachers are learning is that they were knowledge bombed and they can't tell you anything about what they just learned. So it has to be that acquisition, that articulation. I've acquired knowledge. I can articulate that knowledge. And then finally, I can actualize that knowledge. So how do we really plan professional development to move from acquisition to articulation to actualization? That's powerful, because if we leave out that articulation piece, have you ever been able to actualize something that you can't articulate? The answer is no, you simply can't. And so that's a good framework, I think, for us to think through how are we designing PD to give them bite-sized information, providing them an opportunity to then make sure they can share that information with their peers, that they can write it down in a way that makes sense, that they can articulate it. And then finally, how do I actualize that? And that is a framework that I think can really move the needle when we think about implementation.
Yeah, so powerful. And I appreciate how before you were also talking about leadership and how leadership has to have a role. And goodness, the principal has so many hats to wear. You know, they're dealing with the parents and they're dealing with 100%. All the content areas and just the administration of a school. There is so much that goes into it. But being able to know about literacy, like that is such a critical role too. So I know that you've talked about leadership in the past, how they need the three V's. Here we're going with our quotables. They need vision, voice, and visibility. So can you unpack that a bit for us and why that really matters?
Yeah, sure. I think that too often we have a general vision in our schools, right? And we have a vision statement. Most people can't mumble it out, right? Or if they do, it begins to sound like they've had a few margaritas after dinner and it gets a little blurry, right? So we have to make sure that a vision is casted, that we believe that all of our students have a right to literacy, right? And that we as a child-facing adults in our building have the responsibility to ensure that they leave this building literate. And I think that is just casting a vision around what is our big picture. Our big picture is that students are leaving our building literate, and we're going to do everything it takes to get them there. But also, vision is saying that we know that the science says all but 4 to 6% of students can learn to read by the end of first grade, really, if they receive the right kind of instruction that's rooted in the science. I don't think we're putting that in front of teachers enough. That vision isn't being casted, that friends, we're aiming for 100%. We know the reality is 95, but if we're landing at 30, there's a shortfall in how our vision is being casted. Our vision has not been accepted by the people that should be receiving it, right? And so we need to be very clear with those aims. And I often tell teachers, I'm like, and leaders, that when we are working with kindergarten and first grade, there is no excuse for us to be aiming low. There's no excuse for us to say, oh, well, this year we're aiming for 60%. We have got to close the gap in KN1. And instead of saying literacy and justice for all, I believe in that 100%. But I want our new mantra to be once and for all. When they leave kindergarten, once and for all, that gap is closed. Can you imagine how much easier it makes it when tier one instruction is sufficient? We are not having to run the small group circus anymore because they're getting high quality tier one instruction. You don't need 19 groups to get kids caught up anymore. That's going to be a game changer for our schools. But we have to cast the vision for once and for all, we close the gap in KN1. In second grade and above, we know that in some places gaps already exist and that there's a lot of work to be done. But this idea of if we could just improve by 4% or 2% or 6%, you're shooting too low. You have to create some ambitious goal that this year we're going to move from 40% to 75% proficient, because your goal has to be to get to that 95% of kids that can read proficiently. And yeah, is it going to take extra work the higher up we get? Of course. But if we keep shooting low, we're going to keep landing low. And in too many places, the vision is causing us to land low. But then we have to not only elevate that vision, we have to use our voice and we have to have consistent messaging. with all of our stakeholders. We have to engage our parents with our voice. We have to engage our staff with our voice. We have to engage students. We have to get buy-in. And I really hate the word buy-in, because I think if you can buy in, you can buy out. I don't like that, right? But we have to make sure that we engage them on the same mission that we're on, that everyone can be successful. And I think in too many places, leaders are a little bit afraid to say the things, because I think they're afraid they're going to fail. I think they're afraid they're not going to reach it. If I say it out loud, it makes it real. You better say it out loud and you better make it real, because that's when it becomes a reality. And I just really believe that too many of our leaders are filled with fear, and they're afraid that if I say it out loud, if I put it in my report that the superintendent's going to see or that the board's going to see, then I better aim for it. And if I don't aim for it, I'm in trouble. Well, my friend, if you aim for it and you were 30% last year and maybe you didn't get to 75%, but you got to 68%, kudos to you, because you aimed high and you landed higher. But when we aim low and land low, we are creating problems by not using our voice with the people that are in front of us. And so the voice is so important, and we're not lifting the message time and time again. We do a kickoff at the beginning of the year. We say, rah, rah, this is where we want to go. But your voice needs to be in front of your people nonstop. How every staff meeting, are you elevating literacy? Are you elevating the fact that our goal is that every kid is going to have a life of voice and choice, because we're going to give them that opportunity through good instruction? There's no other way. It's through good instruction that they're going to get that opportunity. And so how are you creating opportunities? And I know this feels like a pinch for a lot of people. One staff meeting a month isn't going to do it. It's not your voice through an email. It's them seeing your face and hearing your voice and letting your passion lead the way, right? Making sure that leaders really get in front of people. And maybe you say, for 10 minutes every Tuesday and Thursday morning, we're going to meet together. And you're not just using your voice to cast that vision again, but you're also saying, friends, I want to share with you a strategy. Here's what we're going to do. Today, we're going to teach our students to use a complete sentence. This sounds crazy, but we're going to respond in complete sentences. Why? Because oral language matters. And here's what it looks like. And here's the signal you're going to use. And here is a poster you're going to put in your classroom that you can point to instead of saying every time, use a complete sentence. We're going to give a visual cue. And then here are some question cards that you can ask them, or some prompts to help you support them if they don't. And in a 10-minute session, we're elevating one important practice. We're not just saying it. We're teaching you how to do it with our voice as leaders in the spaces and places where we serve. What would happen if two times a week you gave teachers one more bite-sized thing to do? I'm not overwhelming you. I'm actually making sure that you know exactly what to do, that I'm not just casting this grand vision and walking away. That is a danger zone. Cast a grand vision and leave people up to their own devices to try to achieve it. But what would happen if we were strategic enough to really use what I call micro PDs and make sure that in 10 minutes, two times a week, you're able to share information that is meaningful and then that can be supported and monitored throughout the week, that we're just adding to the bank. I hate to say the bank, but we're adding to the toolbox that we have to really support language and literacy in our buildings. This is the way we move the needle. It's not through the knowledge bombing. It's by leaders using their vision and then supporting that vision with their voice. And lastly, they support it with their visibility. Leaders have to be in classrooms. They have to make sure that they're not just in front of people at staff meeting, that they are walking the halls. Why? Because my friends, coaches need support. Assistant principals need support. Everyone needs support and everyone deserves a coach. And so how are you being visible to say, yes, I've shared the vision. I've told you with my voice what the vision is and how to really move it into action. And now here I am. I am here to support you. I'm not evaluating you. I'm not sitting back and observing you. But what I'm doing is I'm here to support you. What can I do in this moment when I'm in your classroom to help make our vision a reality? I actually had an aha moment when I was in a school several years ago. And it was one of those gut punch moments where I was adding up salaries in my head of how many people were watching this instruction. And it was not stellar instruction, I'm going to be honest. And I thought, what a shame that we have $1 million worth of booties sitting in chairs. I can't believe I just said booties on the podcast, but here we are, right? $1 million worth of booties sitting in chairs watching really poor instruction, and we're not doing a darn thing. Be visible, but let your visibility be a support, not an evaluation. Because that's where we change the game. When they begin to see that everyone is all in, all the time, all of us, making sure that that vision becomes a reality. How? By choosing our voice, and by us using our visibility.
Yeah, that was so powerful. And I think even to schools who use data meetings and they're analyzing the data and they're making these goals, it's about moving the numbers, but it doesn't always have a vision. I feel like we need to make that more apparent. And it's not just about going up however many points. It's not about seeing an increase in percentiles. It's about having students lead literate lives and how you talked about choice and voice. Like, that's what's important. And that's the message that we need to bring to our teachers and for them to feel and to feel supported in making that happen. So I think that is so powerful. I hope different school leaders are listening to this and feeling inspired in how they approach leading their buildings. And when we talk about implementation and things being talked about versus just trained on, how can we tell the difference if we're just talking about it or if we're really implementing it well?
This is a good question. I think for a lot of our schools and a lot of our teachers and really a lot of leaders sit through PD and they're sitting here thinking, this is a sit, get and forget PD. Like, I'm here, I'm clocking in, we're doing the thing, I did the sign-in form, I'm going to get my check mark for doing it, right? But we really have far too much to change in our schools to engage in that level of PD. And I think one of the things that I wrestle with and that really as I've been creating my business and working in schools and school district after school district after school district, I used to be a person that would hand handouts to teachers and give them a Google Drive full of stuff. Let me be real for just a second. I can't tell you that I've ever looked at a handout again that I got at a PD or that I maybe occasionally went back to a Google folder. But the reality of really using that in a way that it's going to change outcomes, it just doesn't work because we are in a habit of talking about things or training things, but it's a consumer mentality. Just give it to me. Just give it to me. Just give it to me. And this shows up in our schools when teachers and leaders say things like, just tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do. Right? Just tell me what to do. And sometimes I think that that's the consumer mentality. Just tell me what to do. And then hopefully they take that into action. But I also think they say, just tell me what to do because they're tired of the nonsense of like sitting through and just hearing and hearing the drudgery of PD, right? I think that's one of the things. But also, I think that they say, just tell me what to do because they don't have the knowledge or the know-how of what to do in the moment. And so that's really, my goal is no longer to create environments where people are consuming knowledge, but where they're constructing knowledge, where they're really able to construct their own knowledge. And like I said earlier, when they can do that, they understand what they're supposed to acquire, they can articulate it, and they can actualize it. That's critical. And we have to cultivate really in our schools, how do I know that we're moving from something just being talked about in training? Get in the classrooms. You have to be in the classrooms. It goes back to what we just said around visibility. And this requires more than just an instructional coach. It requires the entire administration team, the district team, getting in classrooms, not to observe, but to what? To support the work, to ensure that every day we're moving a few bits closer to that end goal, right? Of what we're expecting. And that all of us are committed to this idea of cultivating the instructional environment and the practices that we want to see. I like that idea of us being cultivators because I think about a farmer, right? Like if I plant the seed in PD and I walk away and I come back 8 weeks later, well, that thing might have grown and died already, right? And in too many classrooms, that thing grows for a minute and then they realize, huh, no one's paying attention to it. So what happens? It dies, right? But instead, we have to cultivate it. We have to make sure that we're fertilizing it. We have to make sure that we're tending to it. We have to make sure that we're doing all the things. Sometimes it's the trimming and the grooming of it, right? Like to make sure, ooh, that's getting a little wild. Let's fix that. But we have to cultivate it to make sure that it's really producing what we want it to produce. And I think in too many places, that cultivation isn't occurring, right? We're not tending to the seeds that we're planting in PD and asking ourselves, great, now that we provided that PD, even if we provided some training after it as to what it looks like and a little bit of coaching, we then walk away. We've got to be leaders that ask the questions, is it pervasive? Is it consistent? Like, okay, is it in every classroom? Not is the teacher that always does it doing it, right? That's the reality in a lot of schools is that we have the go-getter that does it. And then we have the not go-getter, which is really a lame way of saying that just consumed the PD, but didn't construct knowledge and move it into action. And so we have to make sure that we're asking, is it pervasive? Is everybody doing it? If not, are you tapping shoulders and saying, hey, That takes courage. That's a courageous leader, right? That taps the shoulder and says, wait, wait, this is the way we do it. And then is it consistent? Are we seeing variations of it everywhere and it's kind of what we expected? Or are we paying attention to make sure like that's exactly what we expected? And then finally, is it effective? Like, are we seeing the outcomes? Are you tracking data? Are you measuring the impact of what you're doing? Are you seeing it through observations? And I'm scared to say that word, but are you seeing it while you're in the room supporting teachers? Like, hey, this is actually taking root. This is going to continue to thrive and grow over time. Or is it spotty? It maybe happens when you pop in. That's the problem with just, oh, we're going to see every teacher one time a week. This is a shift. We're not going to see teachers one time a week. They can expect to see me almost every day during the literacy block. They're just not going to know which time I'm coming in there. We have to get to a place where our school leaders, our coaches, our principals, our APs, where their schedules are completely clear to focus on instruction. If I was a parent and I have nieces and nephews that I wish at their schools, that I would call the school and say, hey, can I talk to the principal? And they would say, no, she's in the classrooms. She's really making sure that instruction is leading to outcomes. I would not be upset if she had to call me at 2 o'clock. Because really, that's what I want. That's what I want for my nieces and nephews. And that's probably what every parent wants for their child, is to know without a shadow of the doubt that the school that their child has been placed in, that someone is tending to teaching and learning in such a way that it's going to produce lasting results that lead to literate lives for those kids. So that's what I would say about, like, that's a lot around, like, what do we know if it's being just talked about or trained on? It's all about getting in classrooms, moving away from this idea of like passive teaching and learning to active teaching and learning, but really passive leadership to active leadership in classrooms. So it's evident in our classrooms. I think that's the thing. And that's really how we know that it's happening. And we're seeing it in what the students are able to do.
Yeah. And it's all going back to that visibility piece. And how many times you hear about teachers, they're texting each other like, oh, the principal's down the hall making his or her rounds. They're coming to you next.
Right. What if instead they were texting each other and saying, where's leadership today? I don't see them anywhere. Like, that would be a different kind of environment, right? Yeah. And then if they were looking forward to them coming, because I know that when the principal's in the hall or the coach is in my classroom, like, they are here to support me. We are all in this, all of us together, to ensure that we get to the vision that has been casted. And I think that's so important.
100%. And leadership should never feel like this threatening, like, oh no, they're here to judge me. It's more like they're here to help you and to make sure that we're all on the same page for making the vision come to light, and giving that on the spot feedback and celebrating the teachers, you know, 100%. Celebrating their successes. That's huge.
Yep.
So when we're thinking about supporting implementation, what are a few small but high leverage changes schools can make?
So one of the things that I love to say, and I know you love quotables, is this, that we don't create solutions in silos, right? We don't solve problems in silos. Create an implementation team, get people in your building that you know are invested in making the vision a reality, and create an implementation team. Gather a group of key leaders that spans across different departments, making sure that you have the MTSS leader, the special education leader, you have grade level chairs. It doesn't have to be a grade level chair, someone that can communicate back to their grade level leadership. Someone's around the table that can really study what's being implemented, what's working, what's not working, and then a plan to improve it. Sometimes I think we make this so much more difficult. We're like, oh, we have to use this really fancy protocol and this, that, and the other in a 20-page checklist. Why don't we just talk about what have we been working on? Is it working? Is it not working? If it's working, excellent. Where is it working best? And how can we continue to multiply what's happening over there across our building? If it's not working, what's the barrier? What do we need to do to solve the problem? And that's really it, right? I think it's the plan, study, do, act framework. I might have got that mixed up, but it's really that in a nutshell. And it needs to be much more organic in the conversations and just focused on, here are the 5 things we said we were going to focus on this week as a leadership team. Or as an implementation team, let's talk about these things. Where is it going well? Where is it not going so well? And how do we continue to ensure that it does? I think another really small but high leverage change is you have to create a roadmap for this. Like, we cannot be throwing darts in the dark. Where is it that we want to go? And then plan the work and work the plan. That is a common practice for leaders, but too often we're rapid firing and we don't know exactly where we're trying to go. We're just trying to get it done. But one of the success levers that I've used in schools is literally getting a calendar in February of the year before. Y'all, that exploration phase and planning phase and implementation is really important. And sometimes we like the shortcut or the quick way in education and we say, oh, we're going to skip past the planning phase and get straight to the doing. We've got to make sure that we stop and that we create a plan. And then that once we have that plan, we literally work the plan, right? So if we say this week, we're going to focus on this, then we know what's going to be covered in our PD that week. We know what's going to be covered in our 10-minute touch points that week. We know what's going to be reminded of in the leadership email that week. All of that is done for us because we have a plan. But when we're planning the plan as we're doing the plan, things get a little sticky and we begin to become unsure. And really that creates momentum. Sometimes people look at it and they're like, holy cow, how are y'all going to do all that this year? Well, we're going to do it by working the plan, right? And we're going to stay on course. And when we stay on course and trust the process, that's where you start to see that magic happen. But when you don't have a plan and then you start falling in holes, then you start saying, oh gosh, we really need to spend a lot more time right here. It just gets off the mark. And so making sure that that work is planned out for the year, you know where you're going. Leadership knows where they're going before anyone else. District leaders know where we're going before anyone else. And it just trickles down, right? That we've created such a plan for how we plan that the plan can't fail, right? Like, I think there's something magical about that. The other thing you just said, this is like, celebrate the successes. This is a high yield thing. Don't ask people to do without taking pause moments and saying, you know what? We need to celebrate this and make that just a common practice in your school. We know that what gets recognized gets repeated. That's a PBIS thing. If any schools are doing PBIS, right? That recognition piece works for adults too. When you recognize what's working, when you highlight promising practices, I used to call it picture perfect practices. I would take a picture of it, put it on a board, write a caption of what teachers were doing. Guess what? Teachers start looking to see, is my picture up there? Oh, there's someone else's picture. What were they doing? But put it in an email and share, because when we highlight and celebrate those wins, that creates momentum too. We have to define it. What is the win we're looking for? So define that win and celebrate that win all the time, because that's really going to create a culture of, wow, look, we're moving towards that vision, right? Our vision is coming to life. If we have no evidence of the vision coming to life, that can lead to a lack of motivation, right? If we're like, okay, we're working really hard, but I think I'm doing it in my room. Is anyone else doing it? We've got to make sure that we're constantly highlighting how that vision is coming to life. And then finally, the last thing is de-implementing. And de-implementation is kind of a buzzword at this point in this work. I think too often we talk about de-implementing programs, like you need to take out FMP before you use structured literacy. Well, no joke, right? I think we're all there at this point that we really can't have our foot in both things. But I think what people tend to not de-implement is that maybe practices, we're still doing deer time or silent reading. You have to de-implement practices that aren't working. And then you have to de-implement priorities. Because I think too often there are a list of priorities in districts or in schools. And when everything is important, nothing is important. So how do we elevate through our vision, our voice, and our visibility? This is the priority. And we're going to make sure that all of our time, our tools, and our talent pour into these priorities for the school year. That framework of time, tools, and talent is really, really helpful for school leaders to say, how are we using our time? It is the resource that has the most power in transforming this work. And if our time is being spent doing 14 different key priorities, then nothing is getting the time it needs to really help us reach our end goal. And that's hard. That takes up. I talk a lot about courageous leadership, and I say courageous leadership and not fearless leaders, because I think you can still be afraid, but do the darn thing, right? Do it. Be afraid, but be courageous and know why you're de-implementing and help your people understand why. And I think like those are really some high yield things that when we think about implementation, we've got to do that de-implementation. We have to celebrate successes. Make sure that you have a plan or a roadmap. I've seen too many schools with school implementation plans that don't lead to one darn change in their school. It's not a school implementation plan, my friends, but I would encourage you to rethink whatever school implementation plan you have, or school improvement plan, I think is what it's called, right? And make sure that that aligns with your roadmap for what you're doing to implement structured literacy. Those two things, when they're speaking to each other, can be powerful. But if not, it just becomes another priority that's taking up people's planning time, that's captivating leaders' time, and taking them away from doing the work that matters. And so it's really critical that we have that roadmap and then that team that helps me make sure that we're staying on that path that we created and that we're actually getting upstream, right? We're thinking, what are the things that are going to cause us downstream to stumble? Like, let's get upstream and make sure that we're figuring it all out before other people have to deal with the consequences. So that implementation team is really critical.
Yeah. And that all just makes it much more concrete work too, having a plan in place. And I love hearing you talk about de-implementation because, I mean, you say it's a buzzword, but I feel like that's something that's not talked about nearly enough.
No, because it's confrontational, right? Like it's confrontational to say, stop doing this. And so I think you're probably right. I think we hear it in leadership circles, but we're not hearing it enough in schools.
Definitely. And teachers feel this pressure of like, oh, more on my plate. I don't have the time. And when I think it was Molly Ness who said it when she was on my podcast, she was referencing you, how you have to weed the garden. And
you have to pull the weeds so the flowers will grow. That's what it is. Pull the weeds so the flowers will grow.
I love that. Pull the weeds so the flowers can
grow. And I can't take credit for that. That's one of those quotes that I heard from someone else that
I was already on someone's desk.
I've just admired it and acquired it. So I was like, let me use that.
Yeah, it's really powerful. And it makes it make sense because when teachers feel like they're in a state of overwhelm and teachers want to do right by kids and they want to make sure that they're doing things to move the needle, but we have to take some things away in order for that to be more effective.
For sure.
Let's talk about sustainability. How do we make sure that our initiative of having a solid implementation plan is part of the long game and not just, you know, flies into the wind?
I think this is where most people struggle, right? We get a really strong start and then it's like, oh gosh, this is going to be hard work. It's going to be long work, right? How do I maintain that? So this is going to sound common sense, but keep it simple. I think our real job as leaders in this work is to make what is complex simple so that we can sustain it. Make the complex simple so that we can sustain it. And that requires teams and leaders really wrestling with what shifts need to be made, and then keeping the ask from teachers simple and keeping the implementation simple, making sure that they know exactly clarity, right? The word clarity comes up all the time. I was actually on the phone this morning with a school leader who we are a few weeks into school here now in Georgia, and there's tension, right? And there's tension amongst leaders in a building. There's tension among teachers. And it's not because anyone's a bad leader. It's just because there's a lack of clarity, right? And we need to take a moment to pause and say, let's clear things up. Let's make sure that we are being clear with what we're asking and that we're being clear with how to implement it. And that goes back to, if we want to sustain it and everything gets unclear and gets fuzzy, y'all, if things get fuzzy on that big picture that we were just talking about, it's not going to be sustainable. And so we have to make sure that we work actively to make sure that what is complex becomes simple, because that's the way that we will sustain it.
To keep that vision clear.
Yep.
I love it. So before you mentioned this concept of micro PD, can you explain what that is exactly and why do you recommend that?
Yeah, so micro PD is really what I said, right? It's that 10-minute touch point with teachers. It's an opportunity to make sure that we continue, that leaders across the district or the school are using their voice to bring that vision into reality. And it's really a 10-minute PD, if you will. I don't know about you, but I oftentimes have teachers that are like, you're kidding. They're going to keep us for 6 hours today for this PD. Then at the end, they're like, I don't know why I was in there. Like, what would happen if we got people together and we said, you know what? Every Tuesday and Thursday, you're supposed to be here at 7:30. Kids get here at 7:50. I'm just saying these as arbitrary times, right? Please meet in the cafeteria, or please meet in the hallway or in this grade level room at whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be by whole school. It could be by grade level, depending on needs. But if we had leaders meeting with people and saying, hey, let's meet for a 10-minute PD, I'm going to tell you one thing, a what? Like, what do I want you to do? Why are we doing it? And how do we do it? And then you're going to walk out of there with pre-prepared resources to put it into action that day. The framework that I use when I'm working with schools to do this is to really think about, like, know what? What is it that I need to know? So what? Why is it important? Right? And in the know what, like, anchor it in research if you can, because I think that's helpful to know, like, hey, we're implementing something that has an evidence base behind it or and a research base. The so what? Why is it important? How does it impact what we're doing and our vision for our school? Show what? Show me what to do. Make it crystal clear. That's that clarity piece, right? Make it crystal clear what you expect it. Model it with leaders right there in that space. Maybe have them turn and model. It can't be something too beefy. It's a quick thing. And then now what? Now what do you expect me to do with this, right? Like, where in our school day do we do this? How does this connect to our curriculum? And then making sure that they know, like, hey, for the next 5 days, we're going to ask you to implement this in your small group session or anytime you have kids in whole group, and make sure that they understand where does it take place and then what you can expect around support. Like, we're going to be in classrooms during this time. We're going to be there to support it, right? We're going to be looking for it. We're going to be, what is the now what? What are you expecting me to do? And then how are you supporting me in the end to make sure that it's coming to fruition in my classroom?
And I love how that's so targeted. You're walking away knowing exactly what to do.
It's almost like it goes back to that keeping it simple thing, right? Like, if we really want things to be sustained, we have to keep the complex simple.
Yeah. And that ping pong of no do, no do, no do.
Yep. No, know a little, do a little, or learn a little, do a little. You're right.
Perfect. So this has been so enlightening. And I know you have so much experience working hands-on with schools all over the nation. Can you share a success story of a district or a school who really got implementation right?
Yeah, I mean, there's several schools that I'm working with right now that I know are moving in the right direction. One of them, like I said, is Marietta City Schools. Huge kudos to their district leadership. Why? Because what is Grant Rivera? Dr. Grant Rivera uses his vision, his voice, and his visibility to make sure that this work is working in schools. He constantly has a listening ear, talking to teachers and saying, what do you need to do this work well? Getting principals together, he's embedded this work into their principals meetings. He's making sure that his team is doing the same thing. It's not the one more thing to do. It is really the thing that they do. And I think that's critical, right? It's not the one more thing to do. It is what we do. And so systems and structures that were already in place, the literacy work is a part of those systems and structures now. So he uses his vision, he uses his voice and his visibility really to make sure that this work works. And they've seen some tremendous growth, and it's sustaining itself, right? It's growing more and more every year, which I think is critical. There's another school that I'm working with that last year we implemented UFLY. Shout out to UFLY. It has been wildly successful, and we actually implemented it middle of the year. And what we saw, and this is a school that has been chronically low performing, all of their kids were in low achievement, low growth. And after implementing UFLY, all of their kids moved from low achievement to still low achievement, but no longer low growth. Where are they now? High growth. So where are we going next? We're going from high growth to high achievement. And so it's really just the simplicity piece. And I know that that sounds so simple to say, keep it simple, but that's the beauty of things like UFLY, right? It's predictable. The routine is predictable. It's easy to coach and to train and to support. And then you can see the evidence in the teaching and the learning for students. And so those are two schools. And I don't want to name all my schools just because I feel like they're in fragile places, right? Like they're not necessarily there yet, but there are so many schools that I see that are doing exactly this, where leaders have stepped up and they've said, yep, we're going to use our vision, our voice, and our visibility. We are going to work really hard to create a plan for the year, and then we're going to work that plan. And so when we do that, I think that's what leads to that success. I don't think there's magic. I think everyone's like, what's the magic bullet? Hard work. Hard work by everyone is the magic bullet. There's no way one person can transform schools. It really takes a team of people moving together and transforming schools. That's really the magic. I hate to call it a magic bullet too, but that's the magic. The magic is the people. That it's district leadership, it's school leadership, it is the educators, it is from the superintendent to the substitute, and everyone being aligned in the vision and doing the work every single day, because that time matters, right? When we start saying like, oh, but we have a field trip this day, field trips are fine, right? As long as they're language building opportunities, I'm fine with a good field trip and knowledge building. But we can start seeing like time being chipped away with this. Oh, this is going to take this teacher out of the classroom here. This is going to take this teacher out of the classroom here. Oh, we're all going to this assembly here. We have to really be careful of our time and making sure that our time is a testament to what we believe is possible, but also that it reflects that literacy is a priority and we're going to put our time where our priority is. So when I think about all of those schools that I'm working with, those are the things they're doing. And not a one of the places that I'm working is successful without strong leadership. It begins and ends with strong leadership, because we don't just have a literacy crisis. We have a leadership crisis. And I would even go one step further and say we have a learning crisis, not just for kids, but also for adults. And I think we've addressed that today, is that it's all of those things. How are we helping adults and kids learn? How is our leadership growing in this work and making sure that they know how to lead it? And then finally, the literacy piece, right? Leaders have to know how to do YouFly. Leaders have to know how to take that HQIM and actually move it into action in classrooms. It's not enough to say, but we're relying on that person to do it. Everybody has to know and understand how to do exactly what we're asking teachers to do.
Yeah. And I really appreciate how you talked about there not being this magic bullet or magic wand. And I heard Kimiana Burke speak at one point.
I love her.
Oh my goodness. So powerful. She was saying, you know, this term, the Mississippi miracle, it's no miracle. It was a lot of hard work and a lot of planning that went into it. And I think exactly what you're talking about, it's all about the leadership. And we need to study this success. And it's not just, oh, they implemented a new program. It's how did this come to be? And the vision, the voice, the visibility, how did all of that come into play? And two schools doing the same exact program can have different outcomes. And why is that? And it goes back to this whole concerted effort with everyone involved and how things are being implemented. So right. I think that was really powerful.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. There's a little bit of a misconception, especially because of legislation, again, that if we just do this program, then we're going to probably see results. And you've probably noticed that throughout our session, I haven't really talked much about the implementation of a program because I don't think it's the magic thing. I think that the magic thing is the leadership and the learning of leaders and educators and really moving that from information to transformation, right? That's the magic thing. And we are getting stuck on HQIM, and this is the new high quality instructional material, without really making sure that our leaders and educators understand that that will never do what it needs to do. High quality instructional materials don't do what they need to do without high quality instructional practices. And so we have to make sure that we are building those practices and sustaining those practices. And that's what's going to really change the instructional culture and eventually the outcomes for our students.
Learn it, lead it, live it.
There you go.
If there's one shift maybe in mindset or in practice that you wish every literacy leader or educator can take away from this podcast episode to take into the next school year, what do you think that would be?
Ooh, if there's one shift that I wish people would understand, it's really systems and practices, right, that guide this. It's not a plug and play of a resource. It's not a plug and a play of one PD. It's the system of PD that is ongoing to support teachers and leaders day in and day out to make sure this work is working, right? It's the system of implementing. How are we implementing? How are we supporting that implementation? What does that look like? I think too often we don't think with a systems mindset in education. We think of we're doing this one thing, we're doing this one thing, we're doing this one thing, but it's the systematic approach that really leads to the sustainability, right? Because it's a strong leadership and strong systems. Those are the two things. We have to have strong leaderships and strong systems.
Yeah, 100%. So to close us out, I'd love to have you finish this sentence. If we want real change in reading outcomes, we have to blank.
I think I just answered that, but I'm going to change it from we have to have strong leaders and strong systems to we have to play to win. We have to play to win. And I think like that changes everything, right? When we show up and we play to win, that this isn't just about school improvement, it's about impact. And because of that, we're going to bring urgency, energy, and really high standards to every school that we serve, because students cannot wait for us to get it right. They cannot wait for us to get it right. So we have to play to win. I think that's what I'm going to say. We have to play to win.
That. Yeah, literacy and justice for all, once and for all. We got to play to win. Yep. I love that. Justin, this has been absolutely incredible. I am like smiling, nodding the whole time listening to you speak, because this is just such a powerful episode. I think so many people are going to walk away just feeling so inspired and lit up on how to do this work well. So where can listeners connect with you further?
Yeah, I would love for people to see my website, right? Go to my website. It's www.soarformore.com, and that's SORFORMORE.com. It sounds like a jingle, right? But it's soarformore.com. Shoot me an email. My email is just justin@soarformore.com. I'm happy to respond to email, because really I'm just passionate about this work. Like I said, Soar for More is an extension of my mission and who I am. And it's just a way for me to connect with other schools, with other districts. So feel free to connect there. I am also on Instagram @soarformore. _LLC. That's a place I am on X as Soar for More. So feel free to connect there too. But yeah, I just appreciate the opportunity. You can tell I'm passionate about this. This is what I'm doing day in and day out on the ground. So anytime we can connect with each other, I think, as leaders to say, hey, let's talk about this work. There's power in that. And I just really appreciate the opportunity to connect with you.
Yeah, this was so great. Thank you again. And let's get this implementation piece right.
Yes.
Thank you so much for tuning into Literacy in Color. I hope today's episode left you feeling both inspired and equipped with something new to add to your teaching toolkit. If you're enjoying this podcast, it would truly mean so much to me if you'd leave a 5-star review. It helps other educators find the show and join our colorful community. And don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you never miss an episode. For more tips, tools, and resources, be sure to check out the links in the show notes at michelleandthecolorfulclassroom.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next week. Until then, be colorful and teach colorfully.